Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich, and I'm here with Wim, and you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we take a fun, formative look at work and money for the rising professional. Today, we're going to talk about why making more money is so difficult and what you can do to move yourself toward the 1 milli club. But first, what's going on, good sir?
Living the dream, friend. Living the dream.
Yeah, I feel like I've been dreaming a lot this weekend. This is probably one of the lazier ones that I've had. Where, like, the only time I went out was to get sunlight and pick up food, and that was it. And I did nothing else. It was remarkably similar to last weekend, except Boobalkins was also here.
You know, I was talking about this on the other timeline, and I realized that it's gotten so bad now that I'm, like, daydreaming at lunch about sleeping that evening. I'm like, man, I can't wait to get to bed tonight, man. I'm going to turn this way, then I'm going to turn that way. So, like, it's getting a little scary out here, man, is all I'm saying.
I know the feeling, man. So we did get a 5-star review, but this week we got it on Stitcher. Well, actually, we got it a few weeks ago, but since we normally don't check Stitcher, we hadn't read it sooner. And this one's from Trader Mo. Much respect. And the headline on this 5-star review is "Everything They Should Have Taught Us in School." So Trader goes on to say, "Listen, man, thank you all from the bottom of my heart." You're welcome. "You guys have put me on so many things in regards to career advice that it has literally changed my life." "As a first-generation American college grad, there was no mentor or anyone to give a roadmap of what to expect after school, everything from investing in retirement to just basic conversations around office politics. Y'all cover all aspects of it from a black male perspective that you can't find anywhere else. Again, thank you and keep up the good work." So Trader Mo, appreciate the 5-star review. Appreciate you recognizing the blackness. And you know, fam, I think I'm happiest about that part.
Yeah, I'm happy about two parts, and that is, you know, this is definitely why we set out to do the show. I was joking on the timeline when you hit me up about almost 2 years ago now, like, we're going to do a show about money management and career, and I was like, ain't nobody going to listen to that, bruh. But really good to hear that. This is exactly the lane. It took us a while to find a lane, but this is definitely the lane that we wanted to be in.
Yeah, man. So, yeah, I'm pretty... Go ahead.
Yeah, we have been melanin challenged for reasons that I'll figure out on another podcast, but that's also good to hear.
Yeah. It is always helpful to have that reinforced when people try to tell you otherwise. But if you're enjoying the show and you'd like to leave us a 5-star review on Stitcher, you can look us up in the app there. Pretty simple once you get to the page. You can also go to Stitcher.com and look us up. And there's probably someone in your network who should be checking out the show, someone who could benefit from the conversations that we're having here every week. So do make sure you share. But other than that, anything else you wanted to cover pre-show before we get into the main topic?
I do not believe so.
The main topic.
So this week, making money is hard. So when I was younger, my dad used to always say, "Money only comes before work in the dictionary." And I didn't understand W2F he meant for years. Like this, like I really, like my dad, as I've talked about on previous shows, he's from East Texas, so he speaks in metaphors. Like everything he says is a metaphor. Another one that he shared with me, took me a while to get, was, "You always got more change than sense." And I always thought that was a compliment for like years. I like literally thought he was giving me a compliment for years. But that was not the case.
I thought it was a compliment, too, so we may have to come back to that.
Yeah. Like, I had more money than I did common sense, is what he was saying. You got more change than sense. S-E-N-S-E.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was thinking about it in the completely wrong way. But anyway, go on.
See, man. Anyway, there'll probably be something like he's dropped like these little ninja bombs in my psyche that will probably like hit me 50 years from now, because it took me like that half a decade to figure some of these out. I'm still like deciphering my dad's language. But that being said, I used to wonder, you know, why is he giving me a lecture on the alphabet when I just want some money? Because he usually said this to me when I was asking him for money. Money only comes before work in the dictionary. And it turns out he was right, but he never explained why. And I've like fought my parents about this several times over the years because they had a "do what we say because we know it's right" mentality. But true, they were often right, but they never explained their logic. So I ended up making the mistake anyway to prove what they already knew, that they were right. Like, for example, as I talked about, I buried myself in $30,000 in debt plus interest trying to prove my parents wrong. So why do I bring this up? Listener question. I didn't know if she wanted to be on the show, so I'll just keep it anonymous. But she said today's episode, I think it was PB4 she was referring to, Paychecks and Balances episode 4, was great. even though I wish they mentioned earning more money. And she's right. We didn't mention that. I was talking about how to cut expenses. It's a great question, but the answer might be a little depressing. So as I said, this week we'll talk about making money is hard work. I don't say this sarcastically. Yeah. Learning from my parents, I'll use this episode to actually explain why making money is hard. It's not impossible, obviously. People do it every day, but it is difficult. And I think it's important that we're honest about that level of difficulty, which, if I had to assign this a game ranking, is extremely high. However, I'll end by explaining some ways not to make money or waste money and some surefire ways to lose money, many of which I've already done for you, and you will save the trouble of doing yourself.
Now, I can see some people.
Do you have any opening thoughts?
Well, I was going to say, I know based off of some of the ways that you recommend people not make money, that there are going to be some people who run those type of schemes who are going to be like, well, actually, if you get your whole family to sign up and then you bring it to work and you get people's kids to sign up, you can actually make, you know, $25 and I'll make 50 on top of that.
Yeah, I welcome those people to write in, actually. I will actually invite those people to write in. But I'll talk a little bit about that because there are some exceptions. So your income arc is actually pretty narrow. So many of us will make a significant income increase from like ages 16 to 30. I started working at age 16. I don't even know like what's the legal standard anymore. Can you start working at age 16?
Is it like 14 now? I think you can start working sooner. I thought it was you could get like a work. I forget what it was called. It was like a work permit or something when you were 14 where you could do certain type of jobs. Like I remember I was like literally picking up trash in a park at 14. But hey, I was doing something. You know, I was making some money. But yeah, I want to say someplace it's like 14.
Yeah, I literally think you could till land, like literally on a farm at like age 14 or 13 or something. There's some kind of permit. Yeah, you're right. So
I started some Oregon Trail type.
Yeah. You know, I'm a late bloomer, I guess. I started at 16. But for the majority of us, our income will stagnate, plateau, or in a worst case scenario, drop from age 30 to retirement. I'm assuming this generation gets to retire. That seems to be a mystery that we will solve in the next 40 years, or we won't.
I hope so.
I know
Social Security may not be there, but
I don't know the answer. I do not have the answer, Sway. So we discussed why on Paychecks and Balances episode 1, the paycheck plateau, but I'll hit a couple of these and like what I'm going to call a case study. So I don't know what y'all will define as rich, but I think many of us would say I know. Finally, you admit it.
I'm still not in the 1% though. I'm in like the— actually, I'm not going to say because that might cost us listeners.
I know you up there. But let's just go with 100,000. So we can debate if I would say 100,000 is you're doing well. I'm not saying 100,000 is rich, but 100,000 is what I'm going to use for our case study. So in this little case study, I'm going to say, how easy is it to make 100,000? So let's look at the data. Household income, according to the Census Bureau, estimated median household income, that's at least two in the household. I think it goes up to four. I don't actually think there's a limit. $53,657 for 2014. It was $54,462 in 2013. So, yes.
It went down?
Yeah, it's going down. They snuck that in there. Household income varies by race, with Asians being the highest in 2014 at over $74,000 and African Americans the lowest at around $35,000.
Well, that's a pretty big disparity.
It's noticeable. How close are you to the 1%? How close are you to riches level? There's a CNN money calculator. I'm going to link to this in the show notes. I'm actually going to have probably more links in the show notes than we've ever had. I'm not trying to break a record, but there's definitely going to be a lot of show note links in this one because I had to reference a lot of different tools. So if you as an individual made $100,000, you're in the top 24%. You can use this calculator to see how close you are to the 1%. So that means you make more money than 76% of all Americans if you as an individual make $100,000. So I want to put it this in. Go ahead. You have a comment?
No, I was going to say that doesn't sound too far off.
Yeah, I was going to put this in perspective. So I went to another source, which I'll link to in the show notes, and I want to look at household income. So about 13%, I think it's 13.4 for those of you who like to round to the decimal, 13.4% of households make between 100 and 150,000. Only 25%, so one in four households make more than 100,000. That means between after 150,000 and infinity, only 12% of houses make more than that. And what is that? One in I shouldn't have did that to myself. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's 1 in 6, 1 in 7. What is that? Maybe, well, maybe, but you can do one. Yeah. One. What is 12%? I don't know how to 12% calculate that. I meant for you to
too
do
much
that.
Stress.
I meant for you to do that behind the scenes. I actually need to know this because I'm about to take the GMATs. I need to learn how to convert fractions again. Somebody is going crazy right now because they're like, it's this, it's this. I don't know. I don't. So why is it so difficult to reach 100,000? Because most jobs actually top out long before 100,000. And according to a survey or a study from payscale.com, women's pay peaks at age 39 on average, folks. Please do not write in with your angry emails. And if you do, please direct them to payscale.com. According to median data, it's about $60,000 for women. And after that, there may be small bumps in salary, but they rarely outpace inflation. So in real terms, you make $60,000 for the rest of your career. For men, men's salaries continue to grow to about age 48 and top out at a median of $95,000. So that means 48, age 39, male or female, both topped out under 100,000. Topped out at a median income. So median's not at, wait, let me get that right. Median, yeah, median's in the middle. So that
means,
that's
just the middle number. Yeah.
That there's a lot of people not ever making 100,000. And from the article, we're trained to believe that our income is going to go up in a straight line and constantly growing trajectory, says Lauren Cole, a certified financial planner in New York. Unfortunately, that's not the way it happens.
Nope.
According to the same pay scale study, both men and women see salary growth of about 60% by age 30. So that's a positive, 48 for men. So I graduated college at 22. Let's say most people graduate in their 20s. That means in a 8 to 10 year period, you see 60% of your income growth.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, I believe that.
And if you stagnate at, let's see here, 39 and 48 respectively, that means women are 35 years and men are 17 years from retirement and they're making their top income.
Which seems kind of abysmal and depressing.
It's a little bit of a window to get to retirement. So I'm 33, and I can only imagine knowing that I'll never make more money than I am making right now for the next 35 years. That might be a little saddening to me.
Yeah. Well,
but I mean, it's clearly a reality that people face.
Well, because I'm also thinking about it. You can, because so some people may be like, well, that's just not possible at all because there's merit increases and, you know, if you get a promotion. But the thing is, for most people, while you may make more money depending on what your family situation is like, you know, if you have kids and other things, you go from an apartment to a house or whatever else, you could think that you're making more money, but you're actually making the same thing. Because your expenses have increased right along with those increases you've had in pay. And I'm not sure if that's something that you're going to talk about within here.
Well, yes, that exactly. And I was trying to get what 2015 inflation was, because in addition to just changes in your lifestyle, you'd also have to outpace inflation with your merit increases. So if you get 60,000, you're making 60,000, you get a 3% merit increase, but inflation is 2.7%. You actually got a 0.3% raise.
Yeah, which really does nothing for you. I mean, that's like a few more, maybe like movies.
It does 0.3% or something.
I'm like, so, yeah, that's like literally a few more movies.
Yeah, I'm looking at 2016. The estimated inflation rate was 1.37. And because of the recession in here, 2015 is actually a negative inflation. So we all got a 0.09% raise. Yay, us.
Yay. On the come up.
But in 2014 to 2013, inflation was about 1.58%. So hopefully in 2013 and 14, you got at least a 1.58% raise.
Hope so.
And if not, I'm going to awkwardly move on to the next talking point. So as we've touched on a little bit, the easiest way to make $100,000, get married. It's simple math. Just marry somebody else making the average household income. And now y'all both make $100,000. I mean, 54 plus 54, y'all actually make $108,000.
Really balling now, assuming that the expenses don't get crazy again. Well, because if you get married, you may end up absorbing other things. But I know that's another show.
That's a slippery slope. I'm actually shocked and appalled that you brought that up. But hey, you live your life, brother.
That's why I said it's going to be another show. I just left it right there.
the danger zone. Getting paid to do what you love is not the same as getting paid a high income job. So I bring these topics up to really just set the context. If income and salary is important to you, first of all, I think you need to make peace with that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we live in a consumerist society. Like, there's nothing wrong with owning that you like to make money. I just think you need to embrace it sooner than later. And if income is important to you, prioritize working in high paying jobs and preferably in low cost of living states, towns, or cities. And you should do it as soon as possible. And if you're wondering, hey, I don't know what those jobs are. I'm confused. What jobs would they be? Where do I go? Where do I look? You should look at Paychecks and Balances likes, because we have the best jobs in America. And I'll plug that in our show notes. It's at Pay Balances on Twitter. It's like one of our first tweets, because I knew this would inevitably come up when we started doing a show about career and money management. Yes. So you have to make sacrifices. And one of those sacrifices is if salary, income, wealth is important to you. If you want to get there quicker, and I'll talk about a slow way to get there, make money greater than everything. It should drive your decision. It's the outcome you want is more money. Then more money should influence all of your decisions.
Yeah.
You just need to make peace with that.
Yeah. And there are things that come with that too. So if you do look for the jobs that, and this kind of reminds me of that listener question we answered, I can't tell how many weeks ago that was, but if you are prioritizing money, that does mean you're automatically deprioritizing something else. And that thing could be free time. And maybe that's fine because you're like, you know what? I don't care about free time in my 20s because I'm trying to retire at 43. So I'm going to make all this money now. I'm going to do all these jobs. I'm going to work that 70, 80, 90 hours per week. I'm going to burn myself out. But you know what? You know what's going to keep me warm at night, buddy? That's right. My bank account.
My 1,000 thread sheets. I know. Hand woven by, I'm gonna go down that slippery slope. There are some constraints, reasonable constraints. Again, I like to speak to the contextual limits. I like to, when I go to work, I begin almost every meeting with, let's set expectations. Let's manage expectations, because I really believe 90% of misunderstandings and arguments are mismanagement of expectations on one or both sides of the table. So constraints are managing expectations. It could be your job field, could be your educational background, could be time and energy. So speaking as someone who worked multiple jobs, I worked 3 jobs at one point. I worked at a hotel on the weekends. I worked at a cellular company who remains unnamed during after work hours. And then I had a 9-to-5. And I liked all the jobs. That I worked at that hotel chain for like 2 weeks, and that was the most I learned more in that 2 weeks. I know more about hotels than I ever wanted to know in that 2 weeks, and even the people who stay at hotels. But I'll tell that story another time.
Yeah, because I was wondering.
Yeah, I worked weekend night shift, so you can imagine, and it was like an upscale hotel.
Hope you weren't hanging out too exclusively with housekeeping.
Yes, it was interesting. No, I didn't get in trouble. I just observed a lot of things that happened after 12 a.m. When did I start? Like, I worked like 11 to 6 or something to that effect. I made a lot of money, but I was exhausted. I had no life. And in retrospect, sometimes I ask, was it worth it? I mean, I paid towards my debt. I paid off a lot of debt during that time period, but I was working 40, let's see, part-time, 10 in the evening, probably like 60 to 80 hours. Yeah. And eventually I just got so physically exhausted, I had to leave the hotel job because I couldn't work night shift and then turn around and wake up and work day shift on Monday. And more respect to people who still, I know people who do this now. I was like 25, 6. Looking back, I don't know how I did it, and I definitely couldn't do it now, but I know people who do that now. They work 12-hour nights, they work 12-hour days, they switch back and forth, whatever the schedule says. So hats off and respect to those people who are my age or older. You know, I kudos to you.
I thought you were going to say you were doing that at like 21, not like 25, 26. I mean, I know that's still some years ago at this point, but that's wild, man.
I had to be mid-20s because I was back in Austin and I was out of school. So I graduated at 22 and I was out. So I had to be 24 and younger than 27 because that's when I moved to Denver. So somewhere during that time frame. And I bring that up. I mean, you know, we joke and we laugh, but age is important. Like, when it comes to how much you can physically work. I mean, let's take a sports star. Let's take Kobe's trajectory or whomever your sports star you want to use. Like, age does have an impact on your capability to do extreme hours of work. And like, I physically like broke down. Like, I just could not do it. Now, that was partially informed by, I also had a choice not to do it. Like, I didn't have to do it. I opted into this situation. If I had pressures that made it where like, I will do this or else, then I guess I'd still be working three jobs. And I talked about this on the timeline. Those three jobs paid less in totality than my next job, period. And it kind of goes back to that paycheck arc. So when you're up to your 30s, you get that 60% pay increase. I got a job that essentially didn't double my pay. I think it's like 2/3, increased my pay by like 2/3. And just by work hour constraints, like, I couldn't physically work two full-time well-paying jobs. So working one full-time decent paying job and two part-time okay paying jobs wasn't enough than just getting one well-paying job.
Yeah, I'm still trying to grasp this idea of having three different jobs and like how you manage to have time. Or maybe you were, so were you in that bucket of like didn't have much time to chill because you were always going to the next thing?
So it was, well, yes, but no. So yes, I didn't have a lot of time. And because I was so busy, it actually probably helped me manage my money more. Like, I put a lot more towards debt because I just didn't even have time to see friends, family, take trips, or do anything. But I also had more money. So when I finally did sneak away, like, my irresponsibility levels were, I had more income to be irresponsible in the rare windows of opportunity that I had to do it. That makes sense. So if I went out, I was definitely making it rain. Because I had a whole nother paycheck of rainy funds. It was literally my rainy day fund, I guess.
All right.
But fortunately, I had so few hours to do that I put most of it towards my debt.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I think the only time I ever had two jobs was one when I was like cleaning parks, and then I was also like bagging groceries at some grocery chain that doesn't even exist anymore. And I remember being pretty tired from that, and it wasn't even like full time.
You know, it's funny. My boss now also worked at a grocery store, and I did too. I worked at a grocery store for 1 week, and that was, you know, hats off to
one
people
working.
1 week, bruh. I did stocking for 1 week, and it was the hardest job. I worked harder in that 1 week at that one job than I have in my entire life. Like, that was the hardest job I've ever had, and I worked some pretty shitty jobs.
yeah, that stock clerk life is not the bee's knees. I mean, I'm not knocking anyone who does that, of course. You know, again, power to folks who do that for a living and that's what they do. But I would co-sign that being a stock clerk was probably one of the more exhausting per. I was trying to come up with some equation to equate my exhaustion with the low pay, and I'll have to follow up about that. But yeah, for the money, it was extremely exhausting.
And so I bring this up because I worked those two, three jobs until I found the next job for me, because, you know, at that time I did have a money over everything mindset. Like, nothing else mattered to me but making more money, increasing my relative income. I wasn't even really worried about building wealth. I just was chasing money, and I did anything under the sun that I thought would be an avenue to making more money. And this is summarized on another, I'll link to it in the show notes at thebrokemillennial.com. Actually, there's a couple good articles over there. The Money Pit of Overextending Yourself. So I'll link to that in the show notes for a good read as well about this particular topic, that you can literally work yourself to death or near death. And then,
yeah,
kind of gets existential after a while. You're like, you know, is it worth it? Yes, I've got my outcome. I'm making lots of money and I have no life. You know, what am I achieving here?
Saving for my future.
Yeah. Then there comes willpower and discipline. You know, another reality check. Unless you're the wolf of your street, or wolf of Wall Street, or wolf of A Street among sheep, for many of us, making money will take a long time, period. I mean, under the best case scenario, it'll usually take most of us about 10 years to, if we're lucky, hit this $100,000 plateau. And it might possibly take our whole lives, as I talked about from the pay scale study above, because if you had a 60% trajectory, as we talked about, in your money arc, most of that growth is going to come between 20 and 30. And there may be moderate bumps or jumps between 30 or 40, and even less between 40 and 50. And that, you know, to be fair, that's usually because you're making good money. So if you're making good money, it's hard to make good, better money. Like there comes a point where you'll reach a plateau, and it's relative. I mean, if you're making $30,000 and you get a job making $60,000, you know, that's relative. If you're a millionaire and you get a job making $2 million, like I mean, that growth is not really the same perspective of, you know, I need to make this amount of money and then that amount of money. You're just doubling your money, regardless of how you go about making it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I was going to, I wish I had like something up about this on the screen, but I would imagine that also as you get older and you do a certain type of job, you stay in that role for a longer period of time. Cause I would imagine a lot of the promotions probably come earlier in the career. So for example, you go from being the entry level associate to senior associate to manager one to manager two. But then I imagine as you get older, unless you take on a lot more responsibility, there it is, that you end up in the same type of job with the same type of earning potential unless you take another big leap. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And another, we talked about this, like the boxes get smaller, yet the competition increases. So there's, generally speaking, one CEO. There is one CEO box to fill.
Yeah.
And the competition, therefore, is more intense for that box. And as I talked about earlier in the show, only one in four households make it to 100,000.
Yeah.
So no matter what job, field, profession you're in, only one in four people are figuring out how to cross that $100,000 line, if you will, finish line. And it's not even a finish line.
Yeah. And I'd say for people who haven't got there yet at this 100K, or they're not even close, I think this is also a reminder to people like, yo, just because you're not making some crazy number that everybody on Twitter says they're making, that everyone on Facebook appears to be making, you can still be in a pretty decent position and not be making a 100K, you know. And also some of this, it depends where you live too, you know. So 100K in New York and 100K in Pennsylvania, North Dakota are two different things, you know, so just something Definitely. Else to think about.
But on a positive note, I'm going to tell people how to make a million. Another thing, they did a study that showed like it helps, but your income from year to year doesn't define when you'll become a millionaire, because that's just about how much you put aside. You can make $100,000 and put zero aside, and you can make $30,000 and put $300 aside, and the latter person's going to be a millionaire.
Yo, man, I had a friend who, I'm not sure what their account is like now, but I used to wonder this, and I realized that they were just a lot better with money than me. Like, I'm pretty sure that they were doing odd jobs and other things. I'm trying to not speak too specifically, because if they hear this, they'll very quickly know that I'm talking about them. And I wondered, I'm like, how are you saving so much money? How are you going on all these trips? I'm over here making like X, and I should be doing well, but I don't feel like I'm doing it as well as I am mentally or as well as I think I should be. Yep. It's another one of those types of episodes. And it just turned out that person was, I think them making less forced them to be a lot more rigorous with how they managed it and saved their money. And it seemed like over time they were putting away a lot more in the bank and still having these great life experiences, even though they made less, but it was just because they had a lot better money management skills than I had around that same period. So yeah, it's not all created equal. And I look at the stuff I was buying back then, and I was, you know, balling out and trying to do all of this other stuff, and I'm like, I could have been saving too, but I chose to have fun instead and paid the price.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's definitely give or take. I mean, don't let your income or salary dictate your money management. They're related, but they are not exclusive. They're not, I wouldn't even say strongly correlated. There is an article that came out recently, I believe, from Forbes, which I will not be linking to in the show notes. And they said a lot of money management is personal discipline, period.
Yeah.
That is like 60% of how they were able to extrapolate how much someone would have in savings was how well disciplined they were with money, which was irrespective of how much money they made. But how to make more money. And I'm going to go over these three areas in order of ease and probability. And I'll tell you exactly down to the penny how much money you need to put aside each month to make $1 million by retirement age, which will be 65 in this scenario. And I still believe that spending less money is number one, because it's generally easier to spend less money than it is to make more money for all the reasons we've talked about in the show. You can cut an expense today. If you're lucky, you might get a raise or bonus in the next year. I mean, one is definitive and one you control. I recognize cutting expenses is finite. You can only cut to the bone and no further. But to be honest, most of us haven't cut into the meat, let alone the bone. So I'd say if you haven't reviewed your budget, and we've talked about how, if you haven't reviewed your expenses, if you don't know where your money's going, then pause the show and do that right now and ask yourself, are you honestly spending your money in the best areas for the goals that you want to accomplish?
Probably not.
Number two is, I'm thinking for most people, and that's you are in wide company. I mean, you are not alone. And that's fine. But as we say on the show, know better, do better. Make a change. If you want to stand out from the crowd, you should probably stop following the crowd.
Indeed.
And number two would be invest for a very long time. I mean, it's math, a little arithmetic. Compounding interest is amazing. You will get rich, or at least you will be a millionaire. At least I don't know if you define that as rich, you know, all these Twitter ballers out here. But if you want to know the exact month and day, month and year that you'll be a millionaire, I have a calculator for you. It's from CNN Money. I'll link to it in the show notes. I plugged in a couple numbers. I'll be a millionaire July 2058. I'll be 75.
You said it, I might so be dead.
I might be dead, but according to this calculator, if I just literally do what I'm doing right now for the next, 37 years, I will be a millionaire July 2058. And you can figure out when you'll be a millionaire too by using this calculator. And, you know, I was loosely aware of that. I knew when I was going to make $800,000 because like they mailed me something in the mail and it literally spelled out when you'll make $800,000. And so some people are going to say, man, who cares if I'm rich when I'm dead? And I understand that, but I actually do care because I actually have a goal now. One of them is impacted by a variable that does not exist, and by unborn children, which seems to be less and less likely. But my goal was to provide multi-generational wealth. Leaving something behind has become increasingly important to me as I become more knowledgeable about debt management, my own personal finances, and just looking at the landscape. Like, I want my kids, if I have them, to have a leg up. If not, I guess I'll leave it to my nephew because he's probably going to need it. But I'll leave it to someone. Like, I want someone to have a head start, a leg up. Other metaphors that mean moving forward.
Children. Is that what you want to have? Yeah. Those silver spoon kids?
Yes. I don't want them to have to start from the bottom. Like, why? I don't want them to have to start from scratch every time. I can see no reason. And you could argue with me about the pros, cons, and benefits, but I will argue back that the benefits of giving them something is better than giving them nothing. Even if that's as simple as paying for their college education, I want to give them something other than Papa was a rolling stone, wherever he laid his hat was his home. Like, I don't want to leave them a bunch of VHS tapes. Like, I want to leave them something valuable that they can use in their day-to-day life. And in this particular scenario, it'll be money. Like, that's become important to me.
VHS, or though.
Hey, man. Hey. Something. So the power of compound interest, how much you need to save to get to $1 million at retirement at age 65. This is from Business Insider. And pause the show if necessary if you don't have a pen in your hand. If you're 20 years old, put $361.04 away each month and you'll be a millionaire. If you're 25, put $499.64 away each month and you'll be a millionaire. If you're 30, put $698.40 aside each month and you'll be a millionaire. And this is assuming you're starting from zero.
Say that one more time. I was going to say 30 again, because I realized I was struggling in agony as you were saying it and people may not have been able to hear you.
$698.41. If you're 35 and you have $0 put away in savings for your retirement, you need $990.55 before tax that you should be saving for retirement.
So basically $1,000 a month should be going into your 401k if you're 35 or older or until that next bracket.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. You may be wondering where to find the money. So that would be about 15% of your income pre-tax. And as I said on the previous show, that should be your goal anyway. But I understand it's not easy. This goes back to the don't let your salary dictate your money management. If you make $30,000, it'd be about 14%. If you're 20 years old, you need to put 14% away. And I mean, I made $18,000 after college, so don't write me in talking about like you don't know the struggle. You didn't start from the bottom. Like I started below the bottom. So like we're not going to have a count. Don't out try to out Olympic me on the bottom of where you are, where I am. Because I came out at age. Yes, exactly. I came out when the minimum wage was $5.15. So if you were at the keyboard keying an email about the struggle, don't try to out struggle me. It can't be done. But I understand. So estimate your pre-tax increase. I don't know how much money you make, but generally you'll see about half of it affect your net income. So if you're 20 years old and you put about $300 away for retirement, that'll affect your net income about $150, depending on your tax situation. So quick pro tip, start with 7%. I mean, just start somewhere. Start with 5%. Just start. So you might be sitting there arguing with me about, man, where I'm going to find $300. And so I'm not going to do anything just to spite whim this guy on this podcast. Like, you ain't going to hurt me. You're not going to hurt my feelings by not doing anything. I just suggest that you start somewhere.
I mean,
you're
going to hurt your future. Again,
yeah. If you have, again, an employer match, stop giving away free money. At least match the employer match. It's free. It's free. Like, if it's free. Like, there's nothing else to be said. It's free. You are giving away free money. Stop doing that. It is unintelligent.
Yeah. Yo, you know, I just realized something. I was talking to someone at work the other day about what consists of compensation. And the person was talking about how when they speak to candidates, they include the 401k match in that conversation. And I'm thinking, I'm like, huh, you know, a lot of people probably don't even think about that as compensation that's like eligible. They're like, oh yeah, there's matching, but it's like, fam, you could be getting a free, whatever, $5,000-$9,000 per year, which over 4 years is like 36 grand plus everything that compounds on top of that. So that's income, that's compensation that you're openly leaving on the table by not matching. Don't do it.
If you don't do anything else on this show but do your employer match, then yo, mission accomplished. Yo, kudos to you.
Yeah.
I also had a couple jobs, as we joked about in the beginning, that you should not do. Those are direct marketing, Vector, Wake Up Now, selling supplements. I'm not trying to get sued, so this is just my opinion. But there are exceptions. There are exceptions.
So wait, what's Wake Up Now?
Which I honestly have no idea, because I'm not woke enough to be woken up by now. I'm too woke to be selling Wake Up Now products. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. All right, of
course. And if I've offended any Wake Up Now salesmen, if I've offended any Wake Up Now salesmen, then hey, it is what it is. Because the only exception, and I've given away a lot of money. Like I said, I tried a lot of get rich quick schemes. The exceptions are like established companies that have been around forever, not including Vector. I don't know why they're still around. Apparently, people are still getting scammed by them. You are not going to sell knives door to door unless you are Twitter elite and you have a huge network of people that you can readily scam. The people who get rich off pyramid schemes are people at the top of the pyramid. And that's it. With the exception of people that already have huge networks of people willing and ready to be scammed. Then I say, hey, more power to you. I'm not really I'm telling the people not to do it. If you are convincing and charming enough to get them to do it, then hey, you won out. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah, I'll say this. I've had probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 friends who over the years have come to me to get me to buy some type of thing. I think I still have some Q9 enzyme tablets from like 2006 that are tucked in a box somewhere that I bought just because a friend asked me to. And none of those people today still include that pyramid scheme in terms of how they're making most of their income. Like, they let that ish go a long time ago. because they realized it required way too much work without already having that network of people with their checkbooks and debit cards ready to buy whatever it is that you're trying to get them to buy. So it may sound good when you go to that meeting where they keep you in the room for like 2 hours, and every time you walk toward the door, some big dude stands in front of it. Like, they may make it sound attractive. Even prepaid legal, which is another one, they can make a lot of that stuff sound attractive. But once you get into the nitty gritty of it, and it's like, have your own business, passive income in no time. But then you realize you're consistently trying to chase people around. You're trying to sit family down for presentations, and you're putting your relationships at risk for making someone else rich. That's kind of how it felt to me. And if someone is, if someone has become a millionaire, you know what? I was going to say, if you become a millionaire doing this, right into the show, but we probably won't have you on the show because you're probably going to get people to try to sign up under you. But if you've had success with one of these methods, or you know someone who's doing this as an ongoing thing and they're doing pretty well, and you don't see any sleaze associated with it, I would love to hear about it, because I just don't know anyone who's thriving off of one of these schemes right now.
So would I. If you can put it on your resume, or you have it posted on LinkedIn, and you have had a sustainable income for longer than 1 month, I'm thinking 3 to 5 years, like this has been a legitimate income maker for you, Please write in. I more than welcome it. There is no less than three people trying to sell me a pyramid marketing scheme on Facebook right now. Like, and I have signed up for none of them. So I welcome y'all all to write in. Please. I want to be proven wrong, actually.
Yo, fam, there are people who I refuse to meet up with coffee, who I refuse to meet up with for coffee because I know they're going to try to sell me something. It's just like, oh, man, I haven't seen you in years. Hey, I'm going to be in town. And I'm like, yeah, why are you in town? Oh, I'm here for this MLM conference. Nah, fam, we can't meet. It's just not happening. If you're here for Quickstar International, then I probably don't want to see you until like I'm back randomly on the East Coast at a time when you don't have your sales materials with you.
I had a guy try to sell me some, and I actually did sit down with him because he was a pretty good salesman, actually. And we went to Starbucks, and I had to pay for both of our coffees. And I knew that it was going to be downhill from there. We went up, we got some white mochas, and they said the price. And then there was just this awkward staring contest where he was like, so you're not going to get this, bro? And I was like, all right, this is about to be a bad day.
That's where it starts.
But
anyway.
Ending where we began, in closing, making money is hard. It's not impossible. It's just difficult. And I think that needs to be embraced. It takes time, and for a lot of us, it'll just take discipline. I still believe, for starters, and mostly young people, I don't know, I say that with an asterisk if I fall in that crowd anymore, the first step to making more money is actually spending less money. I still believe that the first raise that you can give yourself is cutting your own expenses. You can give yourself a raise today. Still, making money and lots of it can be done, but you need a clear plan, you need a path, and most importantly, you need to stick to both. And another thing, just on a personal level, is surround yourself with like-minded individuals. If you don't have those people in your groups, then websites or forums. Don't let the limits of others' thinking influence or limit your own. A millionaire told me, you're the sum of your three closest acquaintances. If you don't know rich people, then read about rich people. Follow what rich people do. Copy rich people. But whatever you do, don't follow the advice of broke people on how to get rich. You don't ask your butcher how to give advice on heart surgery. He's a talented person. He works with knives, but they're a different set of tools. Find an expert or a source for expertise, such as Paychecks and Balances, and follow that advice.
Nicely done.
You know, I'll end with, if you know any easy and quick ways to get rich, make more money, please share them with us. Write in. I like easy, quick money as much as anybody. Maybe more. I've just found that usually the easy, quick, get rich schemes only make the seller richer and me broke them. I welcome to break from this pattern.
So do I.
That's all I've got.
All right, man. So a lot to think about there in terms of making more money. And, you know, there are ways to make more, but just like you said, there's always going to be other things that come along with that and other sacrifices that you're going to have to make along the way. And of course, as we consistently say on this show, take that match, take that 401k match. If nothing else, take the match. Or if you're really like, oh man, I really need that extra, you know, $25 a month, then fine, take that 1% lower than the match. You know, so if they're like, we match up to 5 and you can only contribute 4%, then fine, so be it. But take that first step if you haven't already. And if you're like, yo, I'm already killing this, contribute more. That's all I got. So, yeah, want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Paychecks and Balances. So, again, if you haven't dropped by on iTunes, which there's a good chance that you have not yet, please leave us a 5-star review. It helps in terms of us reaching more people. So if you don't know how to do that, you can go to paychecksandbalances.com/review, give you instructions for how to do that on iTunes, give us the stars, give your review a heading, say a few words about the show. Other people see that and go, oh, I should check out this show. Oh, and then they check it out and then they get help and they tell someone else and the world is just a much bigger and happier place overall. So anything else that you'd want to add at this point before we officially sign off?
I would just say that we'll definitely at some point need to have an entrepreneur, small business owner on in the future shows. Because I know they're probably thinking like, hey, I make good money. I work for myself. That's one thing we didn't cover. I'm aware of that and we'll address it on another show.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, we have some things that we're thinking about that are in the works for the future, other things that we don't think about till we're on the show and we're like, huh, we should probably have someone speak on that. So if you listen to other podcasts or you know people that you think would be a good guest for this show, definitely hit us up via email, info@paychecksandbalances.com. But other than that, I think we're good for this week. So actually, as I remember this, next week there may only be one episode, which isn't surprising since we've already had a couple of weeks where there's only been one episode that dropped. But I'll be on the East Coast for a wedding. It's the beginning of wedding season for a lot of people, self included, not in getting married in this particular season, but for going to weddings elsewhere. All that to say, we'll be light on episodes next week. But definitely be on the lookout for email. If you're on our email list, paychecksandbalances.com/email to sign up. That is it formally. So until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.